Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Jason Williams, Sherry Coolidge, Silent Phil and the Ones and Twos. Special guest today, Flying Pig Marathon Executive Director Iris Simpson Bush. But before we turn to Iris, we're going to do our 2021 city election preview, because we would probably usually do that the week before the election, but huge guest next week scheduled, and we want to spend more time with that guest. I'm thinking it's probably the biggest guest we will have had, maybe arguably, on this podcast. So we want to spend time more on that next week. So we're going to do our preview of the election this week. And yes, there is an election, Sherry, right? Am I correct on that?
There is an election, and I don't think much is going to change in the next 2 weeks. So I think it's okay to preview it now.
You know, I spoke to a group last night at Price Hill Chili, and the way that I sort of characterize this election is I use the word weird. And because in the city of Cincinnati, and I've had conversations with some of the candidates, Republicans and Democrats, in the past week, and they've all kind of said the same thing, is that nobody cares. And that's sort of what they're getting out there. And one of the council members told me that he said, and for those who do care, they want to ask him about, they want to talk a lot about national politics, what's going on in Washington. And he said, you know, in a lot of his conversations when he's out knocking on doors and at events, they aren't about corruption or the police department or things, you know, that happen at City Hall or that City Hall has to deal with. Are we looking at, is this going to come to fruition that the turnout is going to be super low here, Sherry, and that it's going to end up showing that, yeah, no one really did care?
I'm using the word unpredictable.
Yeah,
because,
that's a good word.
You know, you and I both talk to a lot of people all the time, and very smart people about elections, smarter than we, right? And then we kind of impart some of their, put all their wisdom together, right? And that is the sentiment I'm getting from everybody. Like, everyone is pretty much thinking it is going to be a low turnout, but what does that mean with a large field of candidates, with a large field of new candidates, with this very stark difference, somebody who's been in city politics for decades versus a newcomer to City Hall for the mayor. And so it has real, people are really shying away from making predictions. They have their overarching feelings, of course, but they're like, well, we'll see. It's more for the council race.
Yeah.
You know, people think that the low turnout could benefit David Mann, although you and I have both seen polls that really favor AFTAB.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. But the unpredictability really is going to affect the council race.
And I should explain more of why I use the word weird, because couple things. Sherry, I was telling the story last night that it was soon after the two council members in November, almost a year ago, had gotten arrested, Jeff Pastor and P.G. Sittenfeld. I remember turning to you, and our desks are right next to each other in the office, and I said, wow, we're going to go from this crazy election year, and next year is just going to be crazy. This city election is going to be insane with all this corruption and text messages and just the chaos of City Hall. And here we are, and it hasn't felt like
I do think marathon. It's a little bit like too much. Like, people are like it tired. Is. You know, you start talking about the election, and you know kind of a reaction I get sometimes are some big sighs.
Yeah.
And that tells me so much, right? It's not like these animated conversations. They usually start with a sigh. And then like a discussion about what's going on. And that's pretty telling, I think.
And my sort of, I guess, 50,000 foot view of this is that a couple things, and this is just observation, is that people are tired. They're tired from the pandemic. They're tired from still, I think, the 2020 election. They're tired of all the back and forth of politics. And hey, this is an off year election, and this is a time to take a break. I keep getting off track here, but getting back to the word weird, I say weird because that's what we're seeing in the city of Cincinnati. And yet you'll go out to pockets around the region, and you see very intense school board races. I've had people in my neighborhood tell me that they have never, people who've lived there for decades, who have never seen this many yard signs in yards
that
for school board.
That is definitely true in Oak Hills. I live in Delhi. I have never, ever seen the signage for school board like I have this
year. Yeah. And so on one hand, it feels like no one cares. But on the other hand, you go to, again, like you go to some suburbs, some small towns. And I assume this is probably, I haven't gotten out across Ohio lately, but I assume this is, you know, there was a Plain Dealer story the other day that said record numbers of candidates are running for school boards. And you have this fervent, intense school board races. And you know, I don't need to get down the road on why that is. But so I say weird in the sense that the biggest election you would think around here is the city of Cincinnati election. And yet, if there is any enthusiasm, it's sort of just in pockets here and there, more so on hyper local types of races. So
I will take this opportunity to remind people, and I'll be writing a story about what's kind of ahead at City Hall, that kind of before the election, to talk about what this new group of people is going to be facing.
Mm-hmm.
It is a lot. And if you don't care, you better care, because the urban core is the urban core, and there are a lot of problems coming down related to how the city's funding with the earnings tax, how the pension is going to be serving people, and your public services, and what kind of money shortfalls, what this all is going to mean with a new group of people at the helm. And so if you're not paying attention, please do.
Yeah. You don't want to make any predictions?
Are you kidding? Hell no. Can I say hell on here?
Oh, yeah. I think Burl's cool with it.
I have a question. Are you going to make some predictions in your column? You do sometimes.
I usually do before the election. And this one is tough, Sherry.
I know.
This is so tough. I think I told you this, that I looked on the Board of Elections website and saw the ballot last week, and 35 names. And I just look at it, and I immediately went to, I'm like, the voter, what, how does the voter see this? And my thought is that the voter just sees this and it's like, oh my goodness, this seems overwhelming. I see a lot of names I don't recognize. And so in a Democratic city, in this case, I feel like this is going to favor the endorsed slate. Is that people are going to say, oh my good, like, I don't know who most of these people are. And I'm a Democrat, and I'm just going to look at my sample ballot, and that's going to tell me who to vote for. And so I think this big of a field, with so many names you don't recognize in a Democratic city in this case, and I think if it were a Republican city, it would be the other way around, that would favor the Republican slate, that people are going to look at their endorsed slate, and I think that's how it's going to go, with the exception of maybe, you know, 2-3 seats maybe. I do think Kevin Flynn gets on, probably the strongest name ID, maybe other than Greg Landsman, Jim Tarbell. Yeah. So I think you're going to see.
He's going to get on.
Yeah.
So there you go. One prediction.
And then you come to the Republicans, and I think that if there's only one Republican that gets elected, I really believe it's Betsy Sunderman, because of her approach on the campaign, and from her seat on council, is that she's picked a couple of issues and she's really made a lot of noise about it and really made like those things focused and tried to get attention around them. Her police and public safety forums that she's held. Her focus on making sure that the police department is not defunded, and her really kind of taking that issue and running with it is, I think, has set her apart among folks who are in the minority political party here in this case. But again, I think we've seen,
she sent out two big mailers. I think one was sent out on her behalf and she sent out one. I have a whole pile on my desk. See my Twitter. Took a picture of them today. And those are just some of them because I've gotten other ones that I just didn't bring in with me today. And the voters are seeing these.
Yeah. And as you well know, Sherry, in a field race, if you have a fervent or a strong base of folks who are behind you, that a lot of times is all that it takes. And it could be all that it takes in a field of 35 to help help her stand out and get not reelected, but to remain on the count like she was appointed last year to fill Amy Murray's seat. So
I'm on team. You should make some predictions in a column. And you can let us know next week what you if you decided to.
I've been thinking about this for 2 or 3 months now. I think when the race was set, what was that, in mid-August? I believe I texted you a list of folks.
You did. I didn't keep it, though. And you know that's like 1,000 texts between us ago.
I'll have to go back and look. I don't remember exactly what it said, but I think it was a pretty good balance of Democrats and some of these other names like Jim Tarbell and Kevin Flynn, Betsy Sunderman, I believe. But anyway, I'm working my way up to it. I'll tell you what I found out though is I feel like I have to explain this every election is that folks, most people get it. Like I get a lot of great response on the predictions, but there's always a couple folks who are like, think that it's an endorsement. I'm like, I'm not saying who I want to win or like who should win. I'm saying who I think the voters will pick to win. And sometimes I'm right. And I think I was like 5-3 on races, 5-2 or something last year. Really missed that Shabbat race. Team Shabbat. I don't think Team Shabbat has let me live that down since. But anyway, let's jump over.
Yeah.
Are we done with this?
Well, no, we have 2 more weeks,
kind of.
But we're done for now. Let's go talk to Iris.
Let's do it. Let's bring on Iris Simpson Bush. Special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. And pleased to welcome today Iris Simpson Bush. She's the executive director of the Flying Pig Marathon and a 2021 Inquirer Woman of the Year. Iris, how you doing?
I'm good, Jason. It's close to pig and queen bee time, so it's exciting and exhilarating times.
I was surprised that you were not a Woman of the Year sooner than this.
You know, Sherry, it was truly a surprise. When I got the call, I thought it was about something else. I didn't know I'd been nominated, but obviously very honored and kind of humbled by it. But it's really a wonderful acknowledgement, and I'm very grateful.
Well, congratulations, Iris. And the Flying Pig is back in person, coming up here. Different time of year on Halloween weekend, right?
Correct. Yeah, we're always the first weekend in May in Greater Cincinnati. So yeah. This is a new and different time for us. Of course, I mean, we're thrilled to be back. And coming off the pandemic, as everyone knows, most all in-person events were scheduled for the second half of the year. Halloween weekend was, it worked out for us. As you know, we don't have our own venue, our own facility. So we have to be permitted to run through the streets of Greater Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky. So Halloween weekend worked. The Bengals are out of town. We start and finish near their facility. So everyone in town has been so cooperative, so supportive. The new Icon Theater venue is down where we start and near where we finish. And again, just so many community partners come together to work with us and help make our event possible.
Did you think about saying we'll skip one more year, or was it we're getting it done no matter what?
we are back. There was no hesitation on the part of our board of directors or the staff. It was time to do it. You may or may not know, during the pandemic in 2020, we did all of our events virtually.
Yeah.
During that year, over 18,000 people ran and walked virtually. So we knew the desire was there with vaccinations available and, with guidance from our medical team and the CDC, we thought it very possible and necessary. We promote health and fitness. And, whether you're walking, running, forever forward, that's our motto. Just keep moving forward. So we certainly had to walk the talk, and that's why it was an easy decision to come back. Admittedly, a smaller field than in prior years, and I think that's for many reasons, but it's not all bad to be a little slower. Resources are tighter. We did not lose one sponsor. All of our sponsors stayed with us, and their resources are more limited at this time. The supply chain issue is real. We're all dealing with it and making things work. So I think all in all, to say that it is a smaller field is not a problem and not an explanation or apology. It's really, things are happening as they should in the time they should, from my view. But coming back, no, that was no tough decision. As soon as it was possible, we wanted to be here.
So what year is this for you guys?
This is our 23rd running. It gets complicated. In year 21, it's our 23rd. And 22 will be our 24th. And our big milestone in 2023 will be the 25th running of the Flying Pig Marathon. And
wow.
I just think it's absolutely awesome. I have had the privilege of standing at that finish line. If everything goes well, I get to stand at the finish line and congratulate and greet our finishers. And that's what keeps me going. That's one of the very gratifying parts about this job.
I was getting ready for today and I was looking through our archives, and we do have pictures of you congratulating the winners, and I can actually see that on your face in those photos.
It is. It's wonderful. In a very, very small way, you get to feel that you're helping someone accomplish their goal. You don't know what their motivation is. Sherry, I think I've told you before, when people come across that finish line, oftentimes they're in tears. I don't know if they're tears of joy, tears of pain, what emotion is driving them, but that you get to be a part of helping them accomplish that goal. I mean, how great is that?
How did it all get started? Take us back.
Well, our founder, the person with the vision, was Bob Coughlin. Bob Coughlin, he owns Paycor, and Bob ran for many years with Team in Training. Many of our board members and participants kind of got their start supporting Team in Training. They would take you to cities all over the country to run in marathons and raise money for their cause. Well, Bob thought, we need this in Cincinnati. So it was his vision. He was the organizer, the person who, went out and really kind of raised the funding to start our first year. In those days, I was the general sales manager at Channel 9. I spent over 30 years of my career in broadcast sales. We call it my previous act. But in any case, I read in the Enquirer that somebody was trying to bring a marathon to Cincinnati. I had run a few myself. I was personally excited. I thought, how great for our city, and the station needs to get involved. So I went to my boss, told him a marathon was coming. I really would encourage the station to support it. And his flat reply as a sales manager, he always said to me, if you can sell it, you can do it. So I called Bob. We offered the station support. I thought it would be, I just knew it would be very good for our city. And so after several meetings, and Bob said he thought he'd died and gone to heaven one newspaper article, a TV station's on board. Things are happening. So a few months into our working together, he asked me to be on the board, to serve on the early board of directors. So I have been involved since August of 1997. Bob reminded me of the exact date. He still serves on our board. He's an emeritus member. And again, we have board members, volunteers, and on the staff side, I represent since the beginning, but we have people who've been with us since year one. You wouldn't believe how many, some of our charity partners, the Avondale Running Club, since year one, and they're still one of our most enthusiastic spirit stations on the course. So that's also part of what's so heartwarming and gratifying for me, that so many people have believed in this event. It started with a notion from Bob, a man who could make things happen. He rallied the right people, and it's grown every year since.
How has our running community changed in 23 years?
Oh, my gosh. You know, interestingly, Cincinnati has always been a pretty strong running community. There were groups that I ran with. Oh, by the way, I met my husband on the Flying Pig Board.
Oh, yeah.
And he's done 10 marathons and had been, you know, as a native Cincinnatian as well, had been running with groups for years. So there was always kind of this interest in running that might surprise you from, you know, a hilly Midwestern town. But to now see the number of people, I mean, there are certain communities, you see runners everywhere, but there are certain communities like Marymount, Hyde Park, the downtown area now and along the riverfront, where you can't drive by without seeing some runners, and many times on the weekends, 30, 40 people running together. So yes, it has indeed grown through the years. You know, we have a longtime sponsor. I got a call from the general manager at City Dash thanking me for allowing them to be a part of something that was so good for our community. He called from his car. He said, I'm sitting at a red light waiting for this group of runners to get across the street, thinking how awesome it is that our community does have so many people interested in their health and fitness, and how he felt that the Flying Pig and his company being a part of that contributed to, you know, the overall health and wellness of our community.
I was on Columbia Parkway yesterday and turning onto Delta, and I saw a group of people like running up Delta, and I was like, God bless those people. Yeah. As somebody, I've run the half pig a couple of times. I don't have a full marathon in me. The training is a lot. But I can confirm hills are the hallmark of it.
Yeah, for sure. But you get bragging rights when you do the pig. And you know, Sherry, not to change the subject, but we do have a lot of people follow up with emails saying, oh my gosh, I PR'd. That's their personal record, their personal best on the pig on your course. So I think especially for people from out of town, when they hear that we're hilly, they train hard, they train well, and they surprise themselves by doing better than they had ever done in a marathon before. So yes, it is bragging rights if you, do the pig.
But it is also, I do think, our community along the route. Because I mean, there were people that like got me through some of the tougher parts, and there were people that don't just say, "Well, I have somebody that I know that's in the race, and I'll come out and watch." Like, people spend time figuring out where they're just going to go watch. It's just an event on the weekend to go do.
Absolutely. And again, that observation is echoed by people all over our community. And, you know, we have now become a national and international event. We get participants from all 50 states. The last time we ran in 2019, we had 22 foreign countries represented. But that's what happens. Word of mouth. The Flying Pig is still considered rather unique in our offerings and the support we give our participants from the time they step across the start line until they arrive at the finish. And much of that, I will tell you, is orchestrated by us. We call a lot of it our planned spontaneity. We have fluid stations every mile. In 19, we had over 164 stations along the course, cheer groups, entertainment groups. I always laugh and say we use the term entertainment loosely, but people from all over the community come out to cheer, play their guitars, get a group together, some church choirs. I mean, it's just amazing the support they get. And to your point, we provide the necessities. I think the community at large welcomes the participants and provides the additional motivation and encouragement that is evident all along the course. So that makes us unique and it's been a big part of our growth. We're in the top 15 running festivals in the country, and that's way better than our market size. So word has gotten out. We were able to carve out a niche of being a little different and very unique, but we put on a serious event where our participants get the support and additional motivation that they need to accomplish their own goal.
And Iris, I think the Flying Pig is really embodies the spirit of Cincinnatians and their giving heart too. Is that at the core of the Flying Pig has always been donating money and helping charities. And I say this having firsthand knowledge of it. When I was the PR director at City Gospel Mission when we started the Step Forward program and the running program to help men and women in recovery. And you guys have just been so fantastic with that program. And I know you are to so many other charities. Talk about that.
There are over this year, it's not as many as has been in the past. You know, some of our organizations did either were closed because of COVID or are still working to come back. You touch a really responsive nerve when you mention City Gospel. Our collective fundraising through the years now exceeds $19 million. Wow. It's spread over the majority, all of the participating charities and the big organizations like the Leukemia Lymphoma Society. They've been with us since year one. American Cancer Heart Association, all of the big guys, I shouldn't say all, but many of them participate and benefit from our efforts. But it also goes down to very, very small. I mean, we have Boy Scout and Girl Scout organizations, PTO organizations, and for many of them, they tell us we're their largest fundraiser of the year. And that's in great measure because we pay the administrative costs. They get to keep the pledge dollars. We started they keep 100% of the pledge dollars they raise. We started a biggest raffle ever where our charity partners sell a chance, a $5 chance, for a pig. And on Flying Pig Weekend, the numbers are drawn. We draw from all of our little pigs that have been purchased. The biggest raffle ever, it's a $10,000 prize. $5,000 goes to the charity who sold the ticket and $5,000, of course, to the winner. Then there's a second, level prize of, $5,000. It's divided the same way. And then we do like a Cincinnati experience. But it's just wonderful that the charity partners can, through their efforts, keep 100% of what they sell.
Yeah.
We pay the administrative costs. And I know City Gospel very well. I've run with the groups training in prior years, work with them. In fact, this Saturday, I'll be going down to talk to the group as they do their last run before the Flying Pig. And I will, if I may share with you, I will tell you at one of City Gospel's post-race events, they do an amazing job of helping people, men and women, with substance abuse problems. And one of the women speaking in tears was talking about all of the support that she had received from City Gospel. Not only did they give her shelter and clothing and the necessities of life, they helped to address the problems, the crux of the problem that had affected her life. And so she talked about that in a very grateful way. But then she said, And doing the Flying Peak 5K absolutely changed my life. It gave me the confidence to know I could take back control of my life. City Gospel and everyone here has helped me in every other facet. But to do that 5K, I had to walk. I had to run. I had to train. I took every step of that journey on my own, and it helped me to believe I can control my own life. I was literally reduced to tears. I still get a little emotional thinking of how she felt walking, running, doing the things that were good for her own health and well-being, how therapeutic that can be, in addition to the obvious physical benefits. I was just probably as moved at that talk as I had been anywhere I had seen people and gotten thank yous for what the Flying Peak does for our community. Hmm. One person at a time, and it's now affected thousands and thousands of people in thousands of different ways. So that's really, it's also part of why I think I keep doing it for all these many years. It has tentacles in the community. We Definitely. Do things that aren't always obvious, but the fundraising, the helping so many worthwhile causes, that's an integral part of our mission.
How many races do you does the company have now?
Wow, I should know that right off the top of my head. I can tell you the umbrella title of Pig Works is because we do so many different things. The Flying Pig is and always will be our signature event. And, of course, with the pig, we have everything from the full marathon to a one-mile event, 1 mile, 5K, 10K, a division for people with special needs, the flying fur for those who want to run with their dog. We have a four-person relay on Sunday. That's about each leg is about equivalent to a 10K. We do, of course, the half marathon and the full marathon. We added a beer series. The pig celebrates our city's pork history, Porkopolis history and legacy. And the beer series, Cincinnati used to be a very prolific brewing town. We were the second largest brewing city in the country, second only to Milwaukee. And so the beer series celebrates that part of our heritage. We then added the Queen Bee half marathon and 4 mile. Women love our event. Women love that half distance. You know, I said to several people, in my own lifetime, I remember when women weren't even allowed to run a marathon. Now our full marathon field is almost half and half. It runs about 55% male, 45% female. But the half is almost 70% female. So we started another half for women. Men are allowed to participate, but it really celebrates women and what they contribute to their families, to the community. And they also have a 4 mile that, for those who prefer, but that's been awesome. And then the FCC3, we do, an event with them to raise money for their foundation and all the great work they're doing in the West End. Our mission is to put on a premier event for athletes of all abilities, to raise money for charities, and to celebrate our community. I really take great pride in the fact that with the help of so many people, we've been true to that mission. Every event we add has to speak to those three pillars, and it's just translated into a year-round platform for encouraging our community to be healthy, fit. And if I might touch on also, a lot of people don't realize how big our youth program is. We, in prior years, have had close to 6,000 children who do an incremental program. We go to the schools. Cincinnati Public has been involved. Many other school districts and schools participate. And those children, the months leading up to the pig, run or walk a few miles a week. They'd come down, they do their 26 mile under the same finish as the marathoners. They get medals, they get shirts. It's become one of the most inspiring sights. It's so fun to see those kids representing their schools and just so happy and thrilled to be a part of something bigger than them. And hopefully we're helping to encourage healthy habits early on. You know, we're recruiting marathoners for future years.
What is race day like for you?
Nerve-wracking, but people say, and you know, I truly, it's even through all these many years, I get down there about 3 in the morning. It's kind of the calm before the storm. I have to acknowledge we've got an amazing staff. They're all down there at 2 in the morning. They're starting to set up and get ready for the event. Everybody's working. I get there and have the opportunity just to walk around and observe, never have to make many suggestions. They've got it covered. But it's a time to just kind of prepare for what's going to happen. One of the things that makes me most nervous is, you know, in a good year, we have between 7,000 and 8,000 volunteers who help to put on this event. Now, we pay their organization a stipend for participating, but these are people who are doing it out of the goodness of their heart. We have a very system. We have a system that works very well. You know, key volunteer leaders are each given the details of their respective responsibilities. That's all disseminated to them early on. But the fact that that many people get up at what 4:30 in the morning, rain, cold, whatever the weather, and come down to help thousands of strangers, that just, it still boggles my mind. And probably that is the reason my knees shake at the start. But there are a lot of reasons, really. But race morning, the excitement in the air, at least for me and the people with whom I interact, the excitement is palpable. It's just, you can feel it in the air. The police, in this day and age, after what happened at Boston, we see SWAT teams. We see, you know, bomb sniffing dogs. The police are down there checking out our areas, checking all of the buses. The first year that happened in 2015, it was very disconcerting, and it kind of gave me a heavy heart. But that is kind of indicative of the way our community comes together. The local Department of Homeland Security, FBI, all of the different police municipalities we go through, they're all down there getting ready to make sure that it's a safe, secure event for our participants. The medical team, over 300 doctors and nurses from all of the medical facilities around town come together on a strictly volunteer basis to make sure that, you know, that they're there to help people. Doing a marathon, a half, doing any of these runs, it's a physical undertaking. Some people have issues, and literally they have saved lives. But, you know, race morning, all of these thoughts are rushing through my mind about how many people on a volunteer basis are coming down to do everything from rolling in posters, stuffing bags, to saving lives. And it is an overwhelming experience if you allow it to overwhelm you. I try to keep the emotions in check. I've been told, how do you stay so calm and cool? Well, that's a facade, because my knees are shaking. But it's just such an experience that goes beyond what meets the eye, you know, goes beyond the surface of what's happening. And again, I think that is in great measure why I continue to do it, hopefully still make good contributions to the overall effort. But I get to work with so many dedicated. Our board of directors is amazing. They come down on race day. They turn their hat around. They're not a board of director on race day. They're a worker. They take on various areas of responsibility. Our staff, as I've already said, a small group, but they are mighty in the things they get done, that they accomplish on race day. And the thousands of volunteers, the community, the way they come out, we hear about all of this spontaneous partying and celebrating and, you know, motivating the runners on the course. I hear about things that I probably shouldn't hear, but all that goes on out there is in the spirit of fun and encouragement.
Are you, because this race is so late, I've just, as we're kind of wrapping up, I have two quick questions. So will we be back to normal next year?
I think very close to. It's awfully hard to predict, but yes, I think by next year, again, we kind of touched on supply chain and resources. If that's back, I think we will be back very close to the numbers we were doing pre-pandemic.
On the same, on our May, typical May date.
Yes, on our typical May date, it will be April 30th or May 1st. And always the first Sunday in May, and then the kickoff is on Friday night. That weekend, Friday night, we start with the 1 mile. But we will be back, and I think it will be very, very close to normal.
Can people still sign up for this?
Absolutely. For this year, we are getting close to sell out on the full and the half. Still some spaces left in the half. The full is getting really full. Saturday, Sunday events. And if someone has been running and they're, you know, we're walker friendly, you can walk, run, or run the events. But Saturday, for our 5K, 10K, and the Flying Fur, we still have openings. So yes, registration is open. Registration for next year will open at 6 o'clock on, Halloween, the 31st. So we are preparing and gearing up for next year as we put the final touches on this year. But yes, by all means, come and join us. If you'd like to volunteer, we still have some spaces where we could use your help. Certainly come out, spectate. We affectionately call our spectators street squealers. Our volunteers are grunts. And that's not to diminish the importance of what they do. It's amazing.
And Iris, where can people go to sign up for the race and to volunteer?
FlyingPigMarathon.com, and that will direct you. You can go to the tabs for either volunteering registration or get start times. Course maps are there. However you'd like to participate, I think you can find on our website.
Fantastic. Iris, this has been great, and we really appreciate you. We appreciate everything you do for our community, and certainly appreciate your time here today. Thank you so much.
And likewise, thank you. Thanks for today. I think you can probably tell I genuinely appreciate the opportunity to get to do what I do. It's a labor of love, so thank you very much.
Your passion is contagious. Thanks, Iris.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks again to Iris Simpson Bush, and one of the true gem events in our region, Sherry. And I would encourage folks to, you just, even as a spectator, you just get out there, and it's so inspiring. I've been to many, many Flying Pig marathons as a spectator, just to go out and watch people do it, and it's to see people accomplish that, and then to also know that the Flying Pig is doing something bigger, grander, to help our community. It's just such a wonderful event. But we go from one So Cincinnati thing.
I know, is that maybe like, that's our So Cincinnati thing, moment. Event? Just the Flying Pig is that. I'll just say this real quick, because we did chat for a while today. I did go to Blooms and Berries. I was wrong. It's in Loveland, which is very far from my house, but worth the trip. It is a really great pumpkin farm. And I have to say, my 13-year-old son was really a little bit on the grumpy side about it, but that was happening anyway. And I thought, well, maybe this will be our last year. And when we got there, he was super into it. I mean, there's a corn maze.
Yeah.
You know, it's all of the classic things. If you're like me and you want to bring home some of, you know, the baked goods, there was that. I thought it was really, really well done. And it was beautiful fall days over the weekend. I think we're going to have some more this weekend. So it's pumpkin farm season, Jason. You can find a list at cincinnati.com. So let's say that, because that's where I kind of was like, which one are we going to go to? And then I was like, oh, that's in Loveland, not Northern Kentucky, not like close. I said. But Cincinnati.com, things to do. It's all the fall festivals and pumpkin patches. And I think there's some apple picking on there, too, which is a little lesser these days. But I love fall.
And also, I got an announcement to make.
I don't know what he's going to say, you guys.
Oh, no. It's just I wanted to give a shout out and a plug to one of our new podcasts in our network, and that is the Ohio Politics Explained, OPE, podcast that our State House team has just launched. And so check that out on all your favorite listening platforms, which are state politics.
I love a good behind the scenes. This one, you know, is really designed for, you know, quickie takes behind the scenes of what's happening up there. It's 15 minutes. So I don't know how they do that, right, Jay? But it's 15 minutes.
So, yeah, check that out. Ohio Politics Explained with our team in Columbus. And meanwhile, we will catch you next week with a huge, huge guest. Catch you then.